He just basically only finds mega crits, right? So it's like, it's safe for Chapman, right? Like Chapman has 20 bucks a year and makes more than all the everyone else.
This guy's
so,
average payout is like, you know, 15 grand. Right. Or something ridiculous like that. Okay, look, guys, you know I'm a little bit picky about sponsors for this podcast, right? And this next sponsor, I personally went and sought out myself. So hang tight, listen for a second, and let me tell you about them, okay? This is the Adobe Bug Bounty Program, and they are one of the best bug bounty programs out there. A ton of hackers love their program and really respect it. And they're a brand we all know and love, right? Who hasn't used an Adobe product over the years? They're a public program, so you can hack on it with your friends super easily. The bounties are great. And guys, the scope is unmatched. They've got wildcard domains. They've got massive primary apps like Adobe Photoshop and Lightroom. They've got open source software like Magento, aka Adobe Commerce. They've got executables like ColdFusion if you're looking to do some of that like Shubs-esque zero-day research on architectural-related stuff. They've got mobile apps like Adobe Reader and Photoshop Mobile. It is a freaking treasure trove of scope, you guys. And like we always say on the pod, you should hack on targets that have live hacking events if you want to get invited to live hacking events, right? And Adobe has been in the Ambassador World Cup for the past 2 years. They are on the live hacking event scene. So it's definitely a good target to look at from that front as well. Also, for critical thinking listeners, they're looking to get some new traffic on their Android and iOS apps. So they're offering you guys an exclusive 50% bonus on your first valid report on mobile apps. On Inscope mobile apps. So just use the code CTBBP619, that's CTBBP, Critical Thinking Bug Bounty Podcast, 619, in your report, and you'll get a 50% bonus. They're going to run this promotion through the end of July, and you can find the program on hackerone.com/Adobe. All right, I'm going to go hack on them a little bit. I hope you guys do too. Tear them up for us. It is a great way to support the pod. All right, let's go back to the show. Sup, hackers. We've got a pretty sick This Week in Bug Bounty segment this week. So let's jump right into it. First up is YesWe Kaito by YesWe Hack. That is a plugin that integrates directly into Kaito that shows you your scope and what kind of programs you can attack within the YesWe Hack ecosystem. So for example, I'm in here. I'm just going to search for Louis Vuitton, and I can see right here all their scope. I can add the scope. I can add the user agent. So this reduces friction for you switching targets or getting details about your target if you're working within the Kaito ecosystem. So pretty sick. I think we'll see a couple of these plugins kind of come on the ecosystem where you'll be integrating with bug bounty platforms directly within your HTTP proxy. Pretty sick. Pretty sick. All right. Next up is more stuff from YesWe Hack. They've been kind of pumping stuff out lately. The next one I wanted to talk about was their Recon Series 5, a guide to Google dorking. Okay. And I don't know if you guys use Google dorking as much as I do, but I Google dork a lot. So this is a pretty sick guide to kind of get you back up to speed on what kind of operators you can use and how to do Google dorking to increase your recon. And one of the things I love about Google dorking is Google knows what's important about a target, right? They index it. That's how people find things about these companies. So I think it's a really good, like, generic way to hack on a specific target. Next up is the Dojo with YesWe Hack as well. I don't know if you guys knew this, but YesWe Hack Dojos get you private program invites on YesWe Hack. This one right here is Hex Color Palette, and I'll give you a little hint. It's an XXE. So go check that out if you're looking to get some private program invites and pop into the YesWe Hack ecosystem there. All right, next up is from HackerOne. We've got an article on smart contracts and common vulnerabilities in real world cases. I know a lot of hackers have been out there killing it in Web3 vulnerabilities and making a ton. So if you're looking to sort of refresh your knowledge on this, also shout out to my boy, Andrew Pratt, that wrote this article, love it. Then you can kind of refresh your knowledge on price oracle manipulation, logic errors, re-entrancy attacks, flash loan attacks, all sorts of things. This is the kind of stuff I deep dived a while back and then have sort of let that knowledge fade. So I think I'm going to go refresh on this myself. All right. Last but not least is BugCrowd. And actually, this is a pretty exciting announcement, you guys. BugCrowd has actually launched a red team as a service offering. And obviously this is cool for organizations. So if your organization needs red team services, definitely check this out. But this is cool for us as the hackers too, because we can potentially get in on this, especially if you're in the bug crowd ecosystem already. And I know a lot of you guys participate in the bug crowd or HackerOne, you know, pen test offering. And this is bug crowd sort of pushing that industry forward and adding red team as a service in to that that flow. So definitely if you're a little bit more on the red team side, then definitely want to check this out. They are recruiting for this from the crowd, they've said, I think down in like the FAQs here. So definitely go ahead and check that out if you're interested in getting in on some contract work to supplement that bug bounty income. All right, that's a wrap for this week. Let's go back to the show. All right, dude, let's just jump right into the mouth of the beast this time because there has been some shit going on in the bug bounty community while I was away on this vacation.
Yeah, I did have to bring down the SmackDown with the Discord.
Yeah. Yeah, dude. Yeah. So, all right. You know, we kind of discussed it off air. We're starting this recording a little bit late because we had to like figure out exactly what we wanted to say. And without bringing too much drama into the pod, I think we had one major thing that we wanted to reassure you guys of about this whole drama thing.
That's right.
Drama is going to come up from time to time. We really want to give a shout out to three people, okay? To Kudingo, to Yobert, and to Inti. Okay, these are the guys that are real hackers that hack. I've seen and been impressed by their hacks many times. They are working for these platforms and they are advocating for you guys, the hackers. So, you know, whatever happens, they're human. They make mistakes, but know that their heart is in the right place for the bug bounty community, right? Am I conveying that right, Joseph? Is that what we wanted to say?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, those guys not only helped build bug bounty into the industry that it is today, but they've consistently fought for hackers and for just the embetterment of humanity for years to come. And like you just said, they might not make the perfect call every time, but I think that anyone who's out there that is skeptical of their hearts or what they're trying to promote or build is in the wrong place, and they need to reevaluate their opinions. Yeah.
These guys, especially advocating for hackers, are not out to get you in the
community. And we did want to say there's not lots of we're not excluding lots of other people who are working at bug bounty programs or platforms, but those guys for sure are often leading or at least commenting on things that are public or making decisions behind the scenes. And you can trust their hearts.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, man. Well, I know that's what we wanted to say. So let's get to the meat. Let's get to the meat, and we won't address the drama any further. Okay. Well, first thing of the meat actually is a new newsletter that came out called Disclosed by Harley from H1, and he does a pretty freaking good. I mean, have you seen it?
Have you seen the
dude? It's and like
we're not sponsored. We're not sponsored by Harley here.
We are not sponsored. We have no affiliation.
We just
with
love
this,
grassroots products.
It's good, dude. I mean, like Harley has his thumb on the pulse of the bug bounty community. Mm-hmm. And this is a thorough ass newsletter.
It is. Like, he's putting a lot of work into it. That was my first thought.
Yeah, and I don't understand how he's launching like six things at once too. Like he launched we're covering it later, but you know, he launched his
vibe coding, man. It's all vibe coding.
The domain, yeah, it's vibe coding, but the domain is kind of crap. But what is it? Disclosed Online. You know, I think he maybe bought two domains, like one for the Disclosed newsletter, and then he used it to like put the hacker profiles.
It's kind
up,
of but, cohesive.
Sort if you of, think yeah, about it. Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, I think that the Disclosed newsletter is definitely worth a sub. Especially if you want to just have a good a list of, I mean, what is this? There's a bunch of things on here. There's learn, there's videos, there's tweets, there's articles, write-ups. Like he's got a bunch of different sections inside this newsletter, which I really like. So even if you don't want to hear about the tweets or you don't really care about the tools, you can just jump straight to write-ups and research, you know?
That's right.
And get a really good update on, you know, what's happening in that specific section of the bug bounty community this week. So
yeah, in general,
shout out to Harley.
I just love anything that's bug bounty focused, because I mean, that's the reason why you started the podcast initially. It's like bug bounty itself deserves an ecosystem of like products and media and content.
It does.
And if you want to excel at anything, you want to basically submerge yourself in that, I think. And people do that in lots of other industries and niches. And it was hard for bug bounty for a while because the only way you could get that content was really like just following people on social media or being in private Slacks or Discords. And I think in large part, critical thinking, you know, quote unquote, solved that problem in a big way. But this is just another great way that you can immerse yourself in bug bounty content.
Yeah. Yeah, dude. I mean, I think it should be clear from the fact that we run a competitor newsletter to this,
right.
And yet we are still shouting it out on the podcast that you should definitely check it out because it is very high quality. So also check out on a completely different note, subscribe to the Critical Thinking newsletter at ctvu.show/blog.
Exactly.
Also really well done, but a little bit more oriented towards the pod, right? Like what we do on that newsletter, just for those of you that aren't familiar, is we take the news we covered on the pod, we take the technical details of what we said on the pod, and we try to give you a way to access that data in text, just in case you don't have the opportunity to listen to the whole episode, or maybe you remember like a one-liner that we said, or like some topic that you need to go back and get a refresher on. Well, you can find it, you know, in text on the
yeah, or you need a payload, or you need, it's basically exactly. it's basically like show notes plus, like it's like a exactly. much more expanded version of show notes.
Exactly.
Yeah.
All right.
I think you have more than me, so I'm gonna jump to one of mine.
Do it.
So XSS Doctor, as we all know, puts out great stuff. Let me hide my messages before I share my screen, because our editors always have to edit that out. I'll share my screen.
Yeah, dude.
This is really cool. I'm surprised this wasn't on your list. Did you see this?
I did see it. Yeah, okay. I missed it. And I even had it bookmarked, but I did miss it.
Yeah, so basically XSS Doctor found a really cool CSP bypass where he uploaded a valid PDF, but because the Magic Bytes in PDFs are not at the beginning of the file, it can also be a completely valid JavaScript file. So it's just a polyglot file that's both a PDF and a JavaScript file. And it's funny, like this is the entire file. But it's based on a really good blog from Doyensec, which we've talked a lot about on the podcast. So you can go check that out. You can go also check out this tweet, but extremely cool payload. And do you think this has been done before and just like not shared?
Yeah, I've seen it before. Okay. And actually I've talked to XSS Doctor about this. Cool. You know, we've kind of compared notes on this sort of like polyglot type of payloads before, because it's very relevant to client-side path traversal, which we are both very passionate about, right?
Yeah.
Is kind of figuring out a way, okay, you know, is there any way that I can upload, you know, valid JSON in another file format type, you know, that sort of thing. Definitely a cool trick. PDFs in particular, I think, are pretty malleable.
Yeah.
So definitely one to check out. And actually, man, we've got pretty relevant. I've got two relevant pieces to this.
Cool.
Actually, so I'm gonna. Did you have any other comments on that?
No, that was it.
Tie it into.
You're good. Yeah. Tie in.
Definitely, you know, very cool to have that PDF as like a valid JavaScript executable type there. Tying it into a different thing, there's also a write-up by Jorian Wolter. I'm sorry, I don't know the name, but on OBS WebSocket RC.
Is this a different Jorian than the other Jorian?
No, this is Jorian.
Okay.
Yeah, this is Jorian that's around all the time.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Yeah, and this was a great write-up. And like, Jorian is a phenomenal hacker, so I'm in no way saying this that you know, that this is not as impactful, or you know, that it wasn't great work.
Yeah,
there was a caveat within the first like two paragraphs of like, if you turn off authentication, then you can do this exploit. I'm like, okay, that is a big if. But the techniques that he used to actually fully do the exploit with the WebSocket interactions and the polyglot file of the BMP here. Let me go ahead and share my screen so you guys can see what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Was really cool. So I did want to tie that out, because while we were talking about sort of polyglot files, this is an area where he was able to craft a polyglot file.
Mm-hmm.
And so the TLDR of this write-up is that in OBS, you can turn on this WebSocket-based functionality. And then if you turn off the authentication for it, then any website can just connect to your local host 4.4.5.5 and send commands into OBS. And some of those commands are like, for example, saving a screenshot, and you can write to arbitrary files on the file system. So he's like, okay, well, how do I convert this into RCE?
Right.
Using the very limited type of, it's not very limited. There's a lot of supported images here, but one of the supported image types was BMP, and BMP has the ability for you to specify essentially just arbitrary bytes within that file as a representation of the image data, right? So I'll read this little snippet from the write-up. The bitmap file format is a very simple one, especially its pixel array variant, which OBS uses when you save an image as a BMP, as it uses no compression. As you can see above, it stores BGR values, which I'm more familiar with RGB, but I think it's like flipped. The endianness of it is flipped. Values by one as separate bytes. If the first pixel is colored as, you know, hex 72644A, and the second one is 6E6169, its BGR values will turn into the byte string, just repeating those back, or the ASCII equivalent of it is the word Jorian, which is his name, right?
Right.
So essentially what you can do is you can use BMPs to smuggle arbitrary like bytes into this file without having to deal with like image compression and some of the other nuances that you'll run into with other image types.
Right.
So it makes it very easy to use BMP as a polyglot file that you can achieve different types of exploits with. So what he ended up actually doing here was using it to craft, and this is another really cool tip, dude, a .hta application, right? Which is an executable format in Windows that will allow you to just run arbitrary VB script.
Mm-hmm.
And the other cool thing about that .hta file is that it is fuzzy. So, you know, it's just HTML in there, right? And then you have access to writing VB script inside of a script tag. So, and HTML is very like other bytes compatible, right? It's just going to be perceived as like just text, mm-hmm. right? Inside of the file. So you can put all the BMP related stuff in there and then just, you know, use that arbitrary amount, the ability to just write arbitrary bytes that we talked about before to build out a script that will actually run in a Windows environment. And pop calc. So he was able to do that and built the whole POC out. I think that is really, really phenomenal work.
I'm not sure how intently you read it. Because I haven't read it yet, but, mm-hmm. did it like, what made it pop when you restarted OBS? Like why did it, how did it execute the bitmaps HTA?
So, that's a trick. He actually wrote it to the startup folder in Windows.
Got
so
it.
He had like,
because you have arbitrary write. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool.
He could write the
Very
file
cool.
anywhere. So he wrote it to the startup inside of Windows, and then it would automatically run the HTA file and pop.
Perfect.
Calc.
That's awesome.
The interesting thing is obviously in order to do that, you need a gadget that leaks the user's username,
mm-hmm.
right? But actually one of the functionalities that OBS exposed via that WebSocket was something that leaked the path you could use it to grab the username.
Nice.
So very good work by Jorian as always. Two takeaways there is BMP files are super helpful for sort of dirty file writes, mm-hmm. right? And then HTA, you know, combined with that is compatible with dirty files and will still allow you to get execution on a Windows system.
Yep. Sweet. All right. The one thing I was going to mention next mm-hmm. was a write-up by Kazushi. I mm-hmm. didn't even know this, but his name is apparently Andrew. I think I mentioned it before whenever we were talking about one of his blog posts. It was the precursor to this one or like the one that came before mm-hmm. this. And mm-hmm. I mentioned it because he's big into judo. Like he's like a second degree black belt in judo, which is super cool.
Oh, dang.
And
that's big,
a hacker. Yeah. So yeah, being into martial arts plus hacking is very cool. Anyways, so he wrote a blog called Time in a Bottle or Knapsack, and he's talking about, it's kind of a continuation on the fact, if you remember the last one talked about how he was trying to come up with some sort of formula by which you could determine like the odds of finding a vulnerability. And it involved as a big part of that formula, like the amount of times you tried. And I think I mentioned, or if I didn't, you know, one big thought of this is like, this is why like fuzzing or scanning or vulnerability, you know, scanning or this sort of like try a lot of things. Often like, or like using active scanner in Burb or using whatever other types of scanners is like so valuable is because you're getting a lot of shots, even if they're not on goal. It's just by taking a lot of shots, you are often going to increase your odds of success. So he talks a little bit more about that, but the part about this, and you all can go and read the blog. You should, it'll be in the show notes. But the one thing in here that I thought was really neat was he was talking about, you know, potentially going full time as a bug hunter and what that would mean. And how it would require him to, you know, make a decent amount of money. And so in here, he specifically says, you know, let's say an average, security consultant makes something like $150,000 a year or whatever. Then, you know, he says random sources show the average payouts between $500 or $1,000 per issue. And I can confirm that, you know, it's really cool. HackerOne shows you what your average payout is. And so me and you and other hackers have talked about this before. It is often around, you know, that I think people who are more on the critical or high end of things often have it more between 1,000 and 1,500 or whatever. But
yeah,
so then he uses that math to say, okay, if I make $750 per vulnerability, how many vulnerabilities do I need to make $150,000 a year or whatever? And it comes out between 250 and 300 vulnerabilities. But then if you assume that, you know, 20% of your vulnerabilities are going to be dupes or informational or false positives, then now you can multiply that again by, you know, increase another 20% to figure out exactly how many bugs you would need per year on average to make a good salary.
And this is stressful for me, dude. I'm not going to lie. Like looking at these at
numbers.
These,
yeah, I know. It's basically one a day is what it comes out to. Which, you know, obviously there are lots of hackers like Inspector, if any of you, Inspector Ambitious, I think is his name. He got MVH at the Google event that I went to in Malaga last year. He just basically only finds mega crits, right? So it's like, it's safe for Chapman, right? Like Chapman has 20 bucks a year and makes more than all the everyone else.
This guy's average payout is like, you know, 15 grand or something ridiculous like that.
Exactly. So there's lots of different outliers. And there are some people with great automation that find, you know, 1,000 bucks a year. But anyways, yeah, this is really cool. But basically for a Western world salary, if you're in the US and you want to be a full-time bug hunter, you need to average like one bug a day. And I will say, don't overly stress about it if you're a listener, because that never works out for me. It's basically like, I'll get an invite to a new program or a HackerOne challenge, or I'll get into a new area of scope and I'll find 6 bugs in a day or something. And then, you know, then you won't find any for a while. But I just thought that was really cool the way he broke that down.
Yeah. So a couple comments on this. One is, I think you should plug in your own numbers as a hacker into this, because I know that my average payout is substantially higher than those numbers. And I think that it depends on what kind of hacker you are and the frequency, right? Because I know that there are some hackers out there, even manual hackers, that just churn out mediums all freaking day,
right?
You know, and they make great money. You know, phenomenal money. And I, don't get me wrong, I am not below reporting, you know, a low or medium or anything that the company finds value. But I think look at your own stats when factoring all this in, because I think you can make substantially more than what he's calculating here by submitting substantially less vulnerabilities,
right?
Depending on, you know, what kind of programs you're targeting as well, and the average payouts for those. The second thought here was that I love these. I love these formulas for bug bounty. And I've actually tried, I'm not sure I can get it up while I'm talking here. I'll try to pull it up. But I have a formula that I kind of put into my talk on hacking efficiently. And I believe this was at Bug Bounty Village last year. So I don't think that I've talked about it, you know, publicly before. I know that I do have a recording in the Critical Thinking Discord. But I love these formulas of like, okay, there's like, here we calculate our attack vector value, you know, we've got the probability of success, you know, the impact of success, the friction to actually test it, you know, you're pulling all of these variables together. And I do have mine out there, maybe I'll send it out in a tweet or something. But all of that really came from a talk for me from way back by Matthias Carlson, actually, where he did a talk at like some obscure like conference, I forget what it was. But he gave a talk on how to optimize your bug bounty.
Yeah.
And I think I asked him about it last time he came on the pod, and we're going to have him on the pod again soon. So I'll ask him about it again. But I think there hasn't been enough research done by researchers into the metagaming of bug bounty like this, right?
Yeah.
Like, how can we optimize our efficiency as hackers and produce the most output?
Yeah, I think that when you look at people like you or like Douglas or other top hackers, I think that they subconsciously have found that product market fit. Product market fit's a weird word, but I feel like they found that like personal time spent fit really well, because like you're incentivized to optimize for it based on the fact that you get paid in bug bounty. So I do think you're right that not enough people kind of think about it or research or focus on it. But I do think, one, it's a little bit personalized. And then two, I do think people kind of find it for themselves because they're trying to optimize for it because they want to make the most money. But they often could make even more changes. I just looked mine up. My average was actually 1,200. So it is a bit higher as well. Yeah, I agree. I think that it's really neat. I think that the formulas do kind of help people. And I think that one big factor that I think you do well and that other kind of top hackers do well is kind of being a little bit ruthless in time spent and like how you spend your time. It's like you almost can't be ruthless enough in how you're spending your time. But that doesn't mean like always switching. It might mean just like blocking off all communication paths so that you can solo focus and go deep, right? But then sometimes it does mean switching and just kind of, I think that what you kept doing during that Google event that I think about a lot is that you were like at least maybe twice a day, but at least once a day, basically saying like, hey, what are the most promising leads? And this is like kind of similar. Alex Hormozi actually talked about this on his on one of his most recent YouTube videos, talking about business priorities. And he was saying like, as a CEO, you often have this laundry list of ideas you want to implement in the business. But when you implement one, there's like a loss. You like take a quick performance loss. And so you basically need to rank those based on the probability of success and how much, how likelihood it, not just probability, but then what kind of impact it will have if it does work. And so I think as a hacker, you can do that exact same thing. It's like if you have six leads, and this is what I was saying that you did well at that Google event. Basically, we would have like six leads or six ideas to pursue. You would prioritize those based on your rough mental math on like odds of success of those, and then how critical the payout is or how critical the impact is based on that. And I think doing that mental math, you probably do that often when you're actually looking through a program, and in life hacking events, you probably do the same thing. And so maybe that's a really solid tip for the listeners is like, if you have a lot of things to look at or a lot of ideas or a lot of leads or a lot of errors, you should actually take a second to step back. Don't just go down that rabbit hole that we're all prone to go down, but list them out and think which of these is the highest likelihood of success and which of these will pay the best if it does succeed.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think a lot of that is informed by intuition as well, because we can't quantify these things.
Right.
Right. Or, you know, we can, it is probably quantifiable, but you know, I haven't seen an effective way to do that yet. Yeah. So, you know, my way that I quantify these is by intuition. Yep. And for that, you have to be a pretty experienced hacker. So this isn't really oriented towards beginners. This is oriented towards intermediate, advanced people that are looking to optimize their output.
Yeah.
All right, dude, we have to move along, but the talk that I mentioned before is called How to Differentiate Yourself as a Bug Hunter by Matthias Carlson at OWASP Stockholm. So we'll drop that in the description. Definitely a recommended watch. Very impactful talk, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. All right, dude, we are not doing...
We're doing great. Listen, you're being negative. We are yapping today, shake off the negative Nancy. We're doing great. The audience is loving it. We're doing great.
All right. Let's do it, dude. All right. Next up on the list, I had hacked in versus disclosed online. This is the thing we mentioned before, you know, with Harley spinning up essentially bug bounty profile aggregator.
Yep.
And this is actually something that Critical Thinking has been thinking about doing for a long time, and we just haven't been able to allocate resources to it. But I'm kind of relieved that some of these other people are taking it on. So obviously there's two of these out here that kind of spun up at the exact same time, hackedin.net and disclosedonline.com. I love Harley. I love both of these products. My thought is that hackedin.net is currently in the lead. And I think this is really necessary. Bring in the hot
takes. I like it.
Yeah. I got to do it. You know, there's some self sign up features. They're working on actually like verifying your profile with, emails. You know, they send an email to like your Reinerator at wearehackerone.com email or whatever.
This is very visual, so I'm going to show the two.
Yeah, show them.
This is what Disclosed Online looks like for my profile. So it's got like my X stats, HackerOne stats, BugCrowd stats, GitHub with top repos, and then it kind of pulls out companies you help secure, and then testimonials from HackerOne as well, and then the other one.
Oh, it's nice it pulled your testimonials, so that's cool.
Yeah, and then Hacked In.
Yeah, show them Hacked In. And so, you know, I think that the reason this is necessary for the industry is that you kind of want to at a glance understand if this person that's talking actually hacks, right? And I've been, you know, I don't really give a lily about this quite as much anymore, because I think I've sort of established myself already as a hacker. Yeah. But it does make me a little sad to look at my HackerOne profile and show like, you know, 30 bugs submitted in the past like couple months right now, because I've been focusing on Google exclusively.
Well, not just that. Right? I hate that it defaults to last 90 days. Like I really wish it defaulted to all time on HackerOne. And maybe that's because I'm the same way, right? I feel like, you know, historically, like I've got 12,000 rep on HackerOne, but then you pull up hackerone.com/rezo and it's like you said, like 10 bugs or 500 rep or whatever. Yeah. So this is what Hacked In looks like once you've got everything set up. Mm-hmm. One thing that the skills don't have enough options. Like there's no AI related skills that you can add. I do like the fact that it lets you choose these two things. They could also pull these from LinkedIn or X. Kind of nice, but it is neat to see, you know, I think I like this a little bit better, where it shows like the rep and vulnerabilities across this, even though they don't line up the same. It's cool to see both of those. And I thought this was like a really nice touch that it shows the stars on your most popular repo.
I like that as well. And so there's a couple things I just kind of wanted to brainstorm with you live on this sort of thing. Couple features that I think should be implemented. I think that they should implement, I mean, platform verification is necessary. So you shouldn't let people link any hacker's profile to their account. So they're working on that, I know. I would also like to see integration with top programs that are outside of the platforms, like Google and Meta, to name at least two. And then I would like to see some formula to aggregate and cross-correlate the reputation and the bugs submitted and pull it into an overall hacker score.
Oh, interesting. Right?
So that at one glance, I can say, okay, Joseph's talking some shit, you know, like what has he popped lately?
Sure.
You know, sort of situation, right? And I think that's the biggest value add.
So what do you think is the real utility of this? This still feels like a gimmick to me. Like, no offense to either of them, but it's like, besides, it is kind of nice, like you said, to have a single place to go to say, like, should I respect this person's like opinion, or is this person legit from like a technical perspective? And it is hard to know sometimes, like you said, because there are people like Yusuf that are like all Meta, right? He submitted everything. It's Meta. And so if someone didn't respect him, it'd be like kind of weird or interesting, because he's so technically skilled.
And there's some sleepers out there, man, in the community that are like
all total Google
killers
or whatever,
but they don't tweet and they don't write blogs. Right. And if they don't tweet and they don't write blogs, and they don't have a HackerOne profile, you know, or whatever, then you don't know if they're popping bugs, you know? And I think at the end of the day, one of the things we love about the bug bounty community is it's POC or GTFO.
Right.
So if you are not actually popping bugs, then we know, you know, it's just a very POC or GTFO community. And I really value that. Right.
Yeah.
And that's why it's important to me as somebody who runs this podcast to be actively hacking, trying to actually make sure that you guys know that I'm not just coming here and talking the talk. I am popping bugs
in the weeds on with the daily. You. Yeah, you're on the battlefield with them. Yeah,
yeah, exactly. So anyway, I think this is very necessary. The hacker score thing I think would be huge. The other thing that I just want to say is I would like to be able to go to a HackerOne profile, a BugCrowd profile, you know, whatever, and change one letter in the domain and end up on this site.
Oh gosh,
right? You know what I'm saying? Like, so it needs That's to be true. Like HackerOne's. You know, That's or like hug crowds.
I couldn't, or I like couldn't that, believe right? you said that the domain was bad. Hacked In, I thought was really clever, and I wish I had thought of it.
Hacked In is good.
You just want to be .com instead of .net?
No. Hacked In is great. I was saying
you said that their domains suck.
Harley's.
You said their domains.
Did I say domains?
Yeah, you said both need a better domain. No, I'm going to quote you in this. Pull up the doc.
No.
It says Richard, both need a better domain.
Run it back right now.
It says I can screenshot it if you want me to. It says both need a better domain.
Oh shit, I did.
It's got to be because of the .net or something. You had to be thinking something.
You're right. I did put that in the. Okay, don't run it back, Richard. Richard, do not run it back. You're right. I did say that, and I see what you're saying. Like LinkedIn, Hacked In.
Oh I think it's super clever.
Yeah, Hacked In, I think, is a good domain. Okay. Would love it to not be .net, but it is what it is. Disclosed Online doesn't say to me, this is where I go to find out about other hackers.
Right.
Right.
I think HackedIn does. It's like, hey, this is the social media profile of that.
Yeah. And actually, I'm a little bit ashamed to say, I think the reason why I wrote this, you know, a couple of days ago was I didn't get it. I didn't get LinkedIn. Oh,
maybe you didn't get it. Yeah. Okay. Well, I mean, but if you didn't get it, then will other people get it? It's kind of something to think about.
It is, you know, and maybe it's because it's a .NET thing. I don't know. But either way, I'm glad to see these popping up. And I would like to, you know, I think once the product is really refined, very valuable. And I will definitely be supporting financially whoever comes out on top of this whole thing between the two of them. You know, via donations or whatever, because I think this product needs to continue to exist. So,
yeah. And I do think it would be amazing if there was some way to make sure everyone uses it. Like, that's the frustrating part to me is like, if one of them gets really good, and I'm sure they will, mm-hmm. but then 20% of people use it, it's still useless. Like, it really has to be something that gets adoption.
Maybe if there isn't somebody who's claimed a
shadow
profile,
just like in Facebook, that would be cool.
If there isn't someone who's claimed a specific profile, then you just cross correlate all of the, like, assume they have the same username,
right?
You know, and then say, okay, everyone with the username Reinerator, even though he hasn't been on here, looks like this.
That's right? I said shadow profile. I don't know if you know what I mean. On Facebook, if you don't have a Facebook account, it still takes every face from every photo ever found online. And there's a shadow profile for you that when you sign up, you can be like, oh, and here's all the photos I'm tagged in. It's already associated with a single face. Like a,
holy
so crap. That's what this would be, right? It'd be like a shadow hacked in account. So,
jeez, that's crazy, man. All right, what you got?
Cool. Yeah. So this is like two kind of AI security. Well, I've got like three AI security things, but one.
What else is new, Joseph?
I know. Listen, I don't know if you all know this, but I get lots of DMs that are like, thank you so much for pushing me into doing AI stuff, or thank you so much for teaching me AI stuff. I also get, I'm sure that there's other, actually, I don't get that much of it, but I'm sure because people are probably kind, but I'm sure there are some people who are annoyed by it. But I will say there are a lot of people who are very thankful of it. So,
yeah. And I, to be honest, man, you know, one of the big differentiating factors, obviously, I'm very grateful to have you on the show. But one of the big differentiating factors on inviting you onto the show is I firmly believe that if we are not utilizing AI correctly as bug bounty hunters in the next 5 years, then you're done.
Right.
You're cooked.
Yeah.
You know? And so I think, you know, as far as the podcast goes, I'm very pleased to have a AI specialist hacker on here as well to talk about these things, because whether the community likes it or not, I'm going to give them what they need, which is an AI specialist in bug bounty.
I love that. So, that's so much of your heart just in outside of bug bounty too. You very have much like a, I love you and I'm going to make sure you're doing well in life. I'm going to make sure I take good care of you. So,
all right. Sweet, man. That warms the heart.
All right. I'm going to share my screen on this one. Yes.
What you got?
Yeah. So I have been thinking a lot about AI stuff, as I always do. I just recently am doing a short-term AI safety engagement for OpenAI, which I was just excited to share because it's pretty cool. They do need to up their payouts, and I sent them a long diatribe about why. But anyways, so this is a really cool AI write-up. It's very similar, honestly, to the stuff that we found in Google Bard over a year ago, which is a little frustrating because in this write-up, they literally say the first one ever. Anyways, I'm going to click this link, share this tab instead. Basically, they call it Echo Leak. It doesn't deserve a special name, guys. Sorry, AIM Security. Mm-hmm. But what it is it's a markdown image exfil, which for listeners who maybe are not or have their head in the sand, basically in AI applications, if it will render a markdown image, you can convince the model to respond with a markdown image link that then has a path or a query parameter or a subdomain that includes sensitive details about the conversation or the user's history or their memory or some other data. And then when their browser makes a fetch request for that specific image, it actually leaks it to your server in your server logs, right? And so that's basically what they did here on Microsoft Copilot. For some reason, they claim it's the first zero-click attack or something. Let me still look.
All right, Rezo, let it go, man.
Anyways.
I know we did it first. We're cool. All right, let's go.
Doesn't matter. It wasn't just us. Like, lots of other people found it too. But anyway, so what it does is... there's some really cool stuff in here. One, it was email based, so you would send an email to somebody who uses GitHub Microsoft Copilot, and the thing that I tweeted about that I thought was really cool was the fact that this typical method of markdown links didn't work. They use what's called a reference based markdown link. So let me.
I see that. Okay, so I saw you tweet this. This was super cool.
Yeah. So this is a reference style markdown link. And you know what's even cooler? I don't know if you saw this yet. If you didn't, you're going to be so happy that this happened. Jun Kokatsu shared this technique last November, 8 months ago, and no one really paid attention to it. So I'm going to share this tab instead.
Piloting Edge Copilot is what he called it.
Yeah, he called it Piloting Edge Copilot right here. I'm going to click on it and share this tab. So basically, he said that when he was hacking and doing a very similar attack to Echo Leak or whatever they called it, basically, they blocked this style, the typical style of Markdown links, but this reference style was allowed, and even just the URL itself, which is how a lot of LLMs work, right? When they respond with URLs, it just automatically turns into clickable, which this is not as usable to what I'm talking about, like the embedded image Markdown, because this will never get turned into an image. But this style can still be used as an image. You just use an exclamation point. So
I'll really? Go,
yeah.
Oh, so, I didn't know that. That's super cool.
Yeah, exactly. So I'll go back to the main AIM security post and show you. Share this tab instead.
Dude, this is just a great call out in general, though. Like trying to look at these more alternative syntaxes for Markdown, I think would be super interesting.
Yeah, it's a great area of research. I mean, just the way that Markdown gets converted to HTML, I've already mentioned that in a previous pod. I think people should dig into it. And there was, I think, maybe a 0 day or something that a critical thinker in the researcher community found. I wasn't able to replicate it, so I don't know if it's fixed, but I think that parsers are always the best place to look for bugs. And so Markdown being parsed into HTML will in no doubt pay dividends if you dig into it and find something interesting. So,
absolutely.
So anyways, here's the image part. It's basically the exact same thing. So, you know, here's the non-image. It's just the link with the reference link and the reference below. Down here, it's the same exact thing, but you just append or prepin an exclamation point. So this reference goes at and this reference can go at the very bottom of the response from the AI. And then this just goes where you want the image to occur.
Wow, that's crazy.
Yeah, so really cool technique. They eventually had to do like a CSP bypass. The other only cool thing that I thought was really neat was rag spraying. So very often these applications will sometimes, especially with like the cross history stuff that we're seeing in shared memory in ChatGPT and in Google and other products, basically when they want to reference other data that's been sent or conversed or saved off, they'll use RAG. If you don't know what that is, I covered it in the AI series if you want to go back and watch that. But this RAG spraying technique. So this is what I thought was hilarious. They did, here's a complete guide to employee onboarding, and then they attack. Here's the complete guide to HR, and then the attack. Here's the complete guide to leave absence, attack. You know, and then like username, attack. Hello world, attack. Right, you just want to have a whole bunch of, this is basically what gets wrapped up in the RAG, which would make it return when the user asks about employee onboarding or HR or leave of absence or whatever. So each of these things is basically tagging that chunk. The thing is, this won't necessarily always work. This is like RAG will often have the data chunked up and you don't know what they're chunking by. Sometimes it's really advantageous to chunk up text by like every 500 characters. Sometimes it's advantageous to chunk it by every 1000 or 2000 or so. This is not going to be a foolproof solution unless you have a white box assessment where you know exactly what they're chunking the RAG on. So it's not going to necessarily be like one chunk here, two chunk here, three chunk here, basically where each tag that you give it will end up in a different chunk, but this will definitely increase the likelihood of success by a lot. And so they basically use the attack instructions. Sorry for the audio listeners when I say here, I'm highlighting something on screen. But you know, he basically just prepended the attack instructions with words that were likely to occur when the user chatted with Microsoft Copilot, such that the attack was pulled into the AI context so that it would override the instructions and print out the Markdown image, which will exfiltrate the data. Also, I don't really love they even called this zero click. I think that WonderWesi also considers this sort of stuff zero click. And in some sense it is, because like if a user then chats with the chatbot, it happens without them clicking. But all of these types of bugs still do require the user to actually chat with the chatbot. But maybe that's just an assumed behavior. So anyways, that's some thoughts.
I would agree with you there that it's not exactly zero click, but I would call that I don't know, it's something like 0.5 click or something like that, right? Like it is distinguishably different from a one click. And I'm not going to lie to you, I've definitely gone to a bug bounty program and been like, this is zero click.
Yes. Yeah.
You know.
Before, and I think they should pay it that way. We talked about that too.
Yeah.
On the keynote of the Jason Haddix and my keynote at the NahumCon, it's like, I think companies should reward these as if they were zero click, because otherwise they get downgraded so low and you're not paying enough for what is like bleeding edge research, in my opinion, if you're not paying these as like that higher severity. Well,
and I also think that is just one of the solid best practices for programs that are trying to be on the forefront of bug bounty is like, you know, if you are able to trigger an exploit with normal functionality of the application,
yeah.
right? Like if you, the user logs in, right. well, you know, if they didn't log in, then right. no, they're not using your app, right. you know, so it doesn't really matter.
Right.
Then pay that as a zero click. Like I've talked about it before, but like I had a bug where I had a CSS injection on the dashboard homepage of a specific site mm-hmm. That it was zero click. I could just plop a CSS injection onto somebody's dashboard. And I just like used it to hit a logout URL and it would just, you know, they would come to their login and then instantly get logged out.
Right.
And so it was like an application level DOS.
Right.
And I think that's, I mean, that's as close to zero click as you get,
right.
you know? So very interesting. I did want to say rag spraying, you know, I do love when different techniques from other parts of the hacking world get cross-correlated. And I think this is a great example of like, you know, just cross applying principles. And I think that definitely this makes so much sense with how RAG works in general mm-hmm. and specifically useful for these like 0.5 click, right?
Right.
Exploitation scenarios. Mm-hmm. So very cool. Thanks for that shout out, dude. I did miss the meat of this. This is good. This is good.
I'm glad you liked it. Good, and it's cool that you got a little June reference there too.
Yeah, yeah. June does great stuff. what did he say in this comment? Because I clicked.
No one sees my stuff, or no one reads.
He says
my
no
stuff.
One pays attention to my talk. We love you, June. Sorry we missed it, bro.
Yeah.
But yeah, guys, let's just go give June a shout out. I'm a little bit salty at him because he got the Slunzer image thing fixed immediately, which is not great, but also partially my fault. But definitely check out June Kokatsu on X. His handle is SHHNJK, and he puts out great stuff all the time.
Yep.
All right.
Back to you.
Next up, yeah. Next up is from the Asset Note team and Shubs. A new tool came out called Newtowner, and I think that this is a really interesting concept. And I'm relieved that somebody.
Well. You're gonna mention Shubs without mentioning that he got MVH first. Okay. When I saw this link on Shubs, I was like, oh, he's just going to mention the Shubs. He's going to congratulate Shubs. And instead, he jumped straight to something else. Congratulations, right, Shubs, with the new MVH.
I tweeted about it.
Yeah, you did.
Shubs, congrats, dude. Also, dang it. He's getting to the point where
he's going
to
pass you.
He's like, it's going to be me and him and Franz with the whole like when it, closest to top MVHs, number of MVHs. I think Matthias is also up there, actually. Mm. But yeah, dude, shout out to our boy Shubs.
Great work.
Always deserves it, man. He always does.
And on his home soil. If anybody doesn't know, the life hacking event was in Australia, which is where Shubs is from and lives. And so,
yeah. And that feels good, dude. Next time they do it, they did one life hacking event in DC, and that was my first life hacking event ever. And I was like,
if they ever do
one in DC again, yes. I'm going to like freaking
destroy it.
That.
Yeah.
But it did feel good to win the Tokyo LHE for Google, because it's not necessarily my home soil, but you know.
Kind of is.
Maybe like
you lived there for a while. If you lived in a place, it becomes a part of you.
Yeah.
All right. Tell me about Newtowner.
Yeah. So Newtowner is a new tool released by the Asset Note team. And essentially it's like exploiting a nuance that we see in a lot of cloud environments. Which is that a lot of times, as a security mechanism, various assets will allow list a specific region or data center mm-hmm. or block of IP addresses, and you can get access to those IP addresses and proxy your traffic through. So Newtowner exploits that scenario, and which was traditionally a very hard scenario to exploit. And they have support for GitHub Actions, GitLab CI, Bitbucket Pipelines, AWS API Gateway, EC2, and Azure. Azure is not yet supported, it says on the status. But essentially what this allows you to do is check for differences in URLs, HTTP or HTTPS across when your traffic is coming from these potentially allowed listed IPs versus from your normal like VPS or whatever.
This blew my mind. It makes so much sense. Anyone who has done large scale recon and just finds thousands of domains that just like error or don't respond or don't mm-hmm. do anything well. Whenever I saw this tweet that says Mutual TLS, not when you're coming from ABS. 404 not found, not when you're coming from AWS. It's oh man, yes. So this is really
cool. This is genius.
Yeah, it's a really great way to get access to new scope or like greenfield unhacked things from a lot of like these really large wildcard programs. Mm. I think this would unlock a ton of like low hanging fruit because these things that are whitelisted are probably old and probably not looked at.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, essentially, I imagine if you find a differential between these two, then it's almost always going to end up in a bug.
Yeah.
So for any of you big recon people, this could be a really good thing to integrate because one of the things that the recon folks sort of struggle with is the volume of all the assets. Mm-hmm. And especially if you're looking to do manual hacking, how do I select one of these assets out of these, you know, 5 million assets I've got to spend my time on manually hacking, you know, and there have been all sorts of attempts to do this with like, let me pull the JavaScript files and
correlate
the single page application, the screenshot, you know, all that sort of thing. And I think this is another indicator of like, okay, well, if it's responding differently when the IP address is coming from AWS versus if it's coming from my VPS, then that's another indicator that says maybe this target's
working. Dude, I bet this has already found like caused so many vulnerabilities to be found.
I'm sure it has.
I didn't know what this was until literally just now. This is insane.
And the thing is, man, you know, like you can't implement everything, you know, but I would say that I think this is one of the things that really, if you're looking to differentiate yourself, not a lot of people I've heard of are doing this. I know that the Acido team has been doing this for a while. I know that I won't shout them out in particular, but there's one other researcher that I know made a ton of money off of this. But Acido, once again, has your back, leading the industry. Insane. Releasing a tool for this. So get it implemented ASAP and be one of the first ones to actually profit from it.
I think the reason why I love this so much, one, I've done a lot of big recon and big scanning, but I think two is I think you in particular and other people are finding a lot more value and a lot higher ROI from spending time on these big, well-paying programs. And this just screams to me like, use it on Google, use it on Yahoo, use it on T-Mobile, you know, like use it on Amazon. Like the a product like this is going to turn up the most results when used at a massively wildcard bajillion subdomain program. And so and those programs right now are often most people's anchor programs, right? They pay well, they respond quickly. And so like the fact that this works on is most likely to work on big well-paying programs makes it even a higher leverage opportunity, I think.
Totally, dude. Yeah. Definitely another great release by the Asset Node team.
Yeah.
Freaking love those guys, dude. Yeah. All right, you're up. What you got?
Cool. Yeah, I mean, this was like a really, really small, short one, but you know, Jason Haddix often shares really great AI hacking tips, and he basically said that this payload has been working for him on a lot of stuff. And I think there's where this is like the year of agents, and people are always looking at agents and hacking on agents. It's hard to like. Well, it's not hard, but I just think that the tips that are most likely to work with LLMs are so much higher value and higher ROI because it's really annoying and frustrating. And you often just give up when you're trying to get a model to like break its rules or do something different. And it's just frustrating you and you just want to go back to normal hacking, kind of give up. And so I think having those like high ROI tips, like last time, I think we mentioned additional instructions colon is like a really kind of a key phrase to use. This feels like another one of those kind of key phrases. Let me share real quick.
What is the phrase?
I'm going to tell you. I'm going to share it first.
Okay. All right.
Share screen. X. Here we go. He said that for agentic systems, he said he's noticed that this works wonders. Basically, you know, have like agent rules section. And this is obviously marked down, formatted, bold. And, you know, very frequently system prompts are in, you know, well formatted markdown. And then he says, treat every, so basically you have a heading called agent rule section. And then you have in parentheses, a thing that says treat every must or should below as a hard constraint. And then a bullet point that's basically like agent or tools must, and then whatever you want it to do. And so what this does is, you know, the model is thinking something like, oh, I'm running as an agent, or I have this access to these tools. And now I have a new instruction or a new, you know, requirement that I have to do what this thing says. And it like aligns with the system prompt really well. And so anyways, he said that's worked well across 50 plus AI first companies. And so I trust him. And felt like a very solid tip.
That is a solid tip, man. If he's tweeting that out and giving that, you know, data set on it, he's getting a lot of distribution on these AI companies, man. 50 yes. plus having tried that. That's pretty sick.
Yeah.
So definitely a good data supported find then.
Yep.
dude, I see that you pulled this Gareth Hayes tweet. And I am like, why
did you not see this?
Why did I not? No. I had it. I had it in my bookmarks, but you know, I've been out for a while.
Yeah, yeah.
And so then it got buried in the bookmarks.
Why don't you tell me about it?
Find it this time. Okay, I'll tell you
what's cool about it.
Yeah. No. I got you. So
is the original poster, is the OP Japanese? Masato Kinugawa?
Yeah, Masato Kinugawa. Yeah. Okay, he does amazing stuff. Cool. And that was actually the one that I had
bookmarked. Yeah.
That I had bookmarked. But essentially, there's another way to Pop XSS that just kind of recently came out. And that is using these object or embed. Here, let me go ahead. I'll go ahead and share my screen as well.
Sure.
But it's using object and embed, and it's using an attribute which I haven't seen before called code base. And like I said, I haven't actually had the chance to deep dive this since I'm recording this episode right after coming back from vacation. But they provide just simply a hashtag in the source or data attribute of these two things. And this is triggering JavaScript execution on mm-hmm. Firefox. I mean, this is one of those things that's really going to break a lot of like WAF related stuff because typically, you know, they're looking for on event handlers and mm-hmm. stuff like that. But this one actually allows you to provide a JavaScript URI. And it triggers. So definitely a good, I don't know how long this is going to last, but definitely one to keep in mind now if you're dealing with a WAF and you want to get a pop in a Firefox environment.
So why does Gareth Hayes' second thing work? Like, did you see his tweet?
With like, you're talking about with the data equals hashtag and then the new line?
Yeah, it's both a new line. Yeah. Here, I'm sharing it. It's both a new line, but it's also like,
the hashtag
like up here, so, up here it makes sense, right? It's JavaScript colon alert. Here it's JavaScript colon slash slash and then somehow fires this alert. Super weird.
So I'll see if I can pull up the docs for it right now as we're talking.
Well, while you're doing that, I had a question. Is there a way to look for other words like code base here? Like, I don't know, I guess that's like a key and a key value pair. Are there other object related keys that like have been underexplored that we could look for?
I mean, absolutely is the answer to that question.
Yeah.
But essentially, I'm pulling up the Firefox docs for this specific thing because, like I said, I haven't had the chance to to deep dive it super much. So we're kind of going to do this live here. And it looks like codebase is actually deprecated, but it says the base path used to resolve relative URI specified by class ID, data, or archive. If not specified, the default is the base URI of the current document. So essentially what this is affecting the base URI that is getting integrated into resolving these data and object tags. And so that's why Gareth's thing here is interesting with the hashtag and the new line, because he provides a JavaScript URI in the beginning. So JavaScript colon slash slash.
Right.
So when you do JavaScript colon slash slash, that starts a comment inside of the JavaScript, mm-hmm. you know, context, right? So JavaScript colon, now you're in JavaScript slash slash is a comment.
Mm-hmm.
And then he specifies a hashtag as a part of this URL that would be a part of the fragment. And then a new line, which is going to break out of that comment in JavaScript, right? And then run alert one.
Interesting.
So this is quirky as heck.
It's really quirky. It's cool.
Really quirky. And I think that this is another really great example of base related functionality being super interesting for hackers, because if you are able to affect the domain or more importantly, really the protocol that a given tag is using by modifying it, whatever its base configuration is, then you can do a lot of really unintended stuff.
That's crazy. So it's deprecated. This has been around, probably used by some random threat actor for years, you know?
Totally. Yeah. And great find by, I want to say it's Masato Kinugawa that found it first. But I know that, other people have sort of built on that research.
Yeah. Cool. I think you had something for Jorian.
Oh yeah.
But I can quickly say something though.
Yeah, go for it.
We already mentioned the drama, but one thing that came out around the same time, and this is actually back, I guess, a nice transition from the other Haddix thing. He, you know, said something along the lines of like, I don't know, are the bug bounty platforms training AI models on user data? So I, obviously I don't work at any of those companies, so I don't know 1000% sure, but I've talked with a lot of those leaders that we mentioned earlier. And to my knowledge, there are no companies, no bug bounty companies that are training models or even fine tuning models on hacker submissions. So yeah, just want to clear that up. I don't, you know, obviously one day it may happen or something. But I will say I've had conversations with them about whether hackers would be upset about that. And I've said yes every time. I do think there is some reality where some hackers agree to give up their reports for some sort of money in exchange for mm-hmm. letting those be trained upon. And I think that makes perfect sense because it's like our intellectual property. I know in some ways you kind of mm-hmm. give it away depending on what you've signed for what platform or program, whatever. A lot of major companies like Fortune 50, Fortune 100 companies, a lot of times whenever you're signing up for their bug bounty program, you actually are giving them the rights to that intellectual property. Mm-hmm. But I do think that that may happen in the future. I actually don't think it's that valuable right now just because these models get so much smarter. And when you do fine tune them for a specific thing, they actually get worse. You and I have tested a cybersecurity model specifically. Google has released multiple cybersecurity specific models and they're just worse than the bigger, better models. So I don't actually know that there's a lot of value in these companies even doing it yet. But I do think that as cybersecurity becomes a bigger AI safety threat, it's possible that they'll want them, or as these hackbot companies grow and have the money to potentially purchase the data set and they want to use those as like RAG, where they pull in really good examples exploits. Yeah.
I think using it for RAG has a lot more value than model fine tuning.
Yeah.
I want to echo, I have talked to at least HackerOne and BugCrowd, and I know that they are not doing it.
Yeah.
I do not know if Synac is not doing it. Not to say that they are, right. I just don't know.
Right.
So I don't want to be put on air of saying that all the top platforms are not doing it. Yeah. But I know that at least HackerOne and BugCrowd are not. I think it's important to note. But I think you hit the nail on the head where I think RAG is a lot more important part of this.
Yeah.
So I think converting all of those into embeddings will at some point be necessary. And I think it's really interesting that like what you said of maybe at some point these companies say, hey, Justin, you have, 2000 submissions here. We'd like to RAG this. Here's $250,000. And I'm like,
why wouldn't you, in my opinion? I mean, it's basically getting more value out of the value you've already added, or it's like more value out of the work you've already put in.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's going to cost them a shit ton of money to buy that data. And who knows, maybe they'll steal it from us, like you said, I think that right now that is not happening. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
It would be interesting if there are any lawyers or smart people out there to know what kind of rights or what kind of things we could do to protect ourselves in that regard if it were to ever happen. Mm-hmm. Like, I would love to know kind of what the recourse is if it were to occur. Because right now we're kind of, as a society, trying to figure out what that looks like in the form of intellectual property of writing in that goes into these models. And definitely the art community is trying to figure out what it looks like. I don't know if you saw it. Disney just sued Midjourney for training on their stuff or something. And so it's going to be interesting to see how all this shakes out. And I think it'd be nice to know what our kind of recourse is.
It's going to set precedent for hackers for sure. Yeah. All right. Last one that I had was, once again, Jorian popping out some crazy stuff. I tell you. Just tweets out and says, hey, I'm not sure you guys know about the debug function in Chrome's DevTools. And when I first read that, I was like, yeah, I know about the debug function. Like, of course I know about the debug function, but I did not know about the debug function. So listen up for a sec if you do client-side hacking. Essentially, what he is saying here is that this function debug in Chrome, which is different, not to be confused with the debugger directive in Chrome, actually allows you to kind of do almost DOM logger plus like hooking, or like proxy like hooking, where you can specify a specific prototype function. In this example, he specifies DOM parser dot prototype dot parse from string, something that's used to obviously parse HTML and convert it into a DOM, and then triggers a breakpoint on that specific function. And that was not something that I was familiar with, and I think is really helpful for that quick and dirty.
I hate setting breakpoints. Yeah. I still don't understand it, to be totally honest. And so I think this is going to be something I could potentially use to like get quick and dirty breakpoints without having to like right click, set it. Oh my gosh. And doesn't it sometimes go away? Like, you can lose breakpoints so easily in Chrome DevTools.
It depends on the way that the site is structuring their JS files, and it's a massive pain in the butt when like the name of JS files is like changing every time you refresh, and you're like, oh, I can't set up.
Well, no, I mean, sometimes though, like even if you set it and it's not doing that, if you accidentally click it to delete it, right? Like if you click it, it's gone, right? You can't recover it.
Yeah, sometimes. And there's also quirks of like, oh, I disabled this breakpoint, but it's still triggering. And just DevTools, for being one of the like very essential tools, is a little bit buggy, I have to say.
Yeah.
So anyway, this is another cool piece. And then one of the people from the comments section says that there's a write-up by Bentowski, which is an amazing researcher at Google Zero Day Project, where he sort of covers this a little bit more, specifically talking about how the debug directive back in the day was shared by the process, not by the origin, so that you could set a debug directive on blah, 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 .google.com, and it would allow you to get XSS on www.google.com, email@google.com, all of these other things if it was, you know, inputted directly into the dev console. Which, you know, is not the most impactful vulnerability, but is something that is not what I would have expected and would potentially have caused even an advanced user, right, of DevTools and of, you know, Chrome to have some unintended consequences. So definitely interesting reads both on this and just knowing how the debug function works.
Before you stop sharing, what is the dollar value there on tweets? Is that, are you in like a beta group, a beta test for showing how much money is from each impression? I don't have that.
This right here. Yeah, I think maybe this is a Chrome extension or something like that, that like, you know, calculates the number of views by the average like payout on Twitter or something. That's like cool. That. So
I didn't know you had that.
It's interesting. You can just be like, okay, you know, this tweet got 2,767 views and it's worth 7 cents.
Right.
Cool. You know, if you're a monetized
sure
person. So
cool.
Anyway, definitely cool. And then I kind of went a little bit deeper on this, because I was mad that I didn't know about this. And I was like, where are the docs for this? And the docs are like super hard to find.
Really?
For this. And I did track down some of them, which is just like essentially a blog post from developer.chrome.com, sort of explaining how it works. And you can see, you know, that a function is being passed directly into the debug function here. But it's kind of hard to actually like pull up the docs on how exactly this works. But I have seen other places where it's used, and there's like a condition being passed in as like the second parameter, but at least the first parameter is certain, and that is a reference to a specific function or prototype where you want to cause a breakpoint to occur. So definitely good to know about.
Yeah, very cool. Well, I don't have anything else. I think we pulled out two pretty neat things to talk about on a future episode, maybe as a bonus episode or something. So we can do that. But
yeah, let's do it. Let's call it a wrap for today. Yeah,
cool. Thank you guys for sticking with us.
Peace.
Bye.
And that's a wrap on this episode of Critical Thinking. Thanks so much for watching to the end, y'all. If you want more Critical Thinking content, or if you want to support the show, head over to ctbb.show/discord. You can hop in the community. There's lots of great high-level hacking discussion happening there, on top of masterclasses, hackalongs, exclusive content, and a full-time hunter's guild if you're a full-time hunter. It's a great time. Trust me. All right, I'll see you there.